put on your seatbelt. Let's go.
All right, turn up the music.
Podcast. She's screaming her head off because it's episode 99.
It's episode 99.
Yep. One away from 100, guys.
And I'm your final girl, Justine. And to my left, always to my left, is your soul survivor, Mr. Josh.
That's me.
Last time I checked, you're Mr. Josh.
I am and you are you. But
we are we.
And we're currently on Oklahoma Interstate 3 West, heading down to Atoka for episode 99.
We've got to tell you guys something. So, yes, it's not Hot Springs. We're not in Hot Springs like we had mentioned previously.
We switched things around with August. We'll try to go there in August, and this was our planned August episode, but we just switched things around, and we're gonna talk to you guys on our way to Reba's restaurant.
And why would we be talking to you all as we are headed to Reba McEntire's restaurant? Where's the correlation, Josh?
We're gonna talk to you guys about Tremors!
Tremors! Or like Dune-ish. You know, there's a lot of differences and similarities between Tremors and Dune.
We also picked this episode, too, because, like the movie, The Town of Perfection.
We're perfect.
We're going to Atoka, which is kind of out in the middle of nowhere in a small town.
Yeah.
So.
Atoka is a little bit larger than Perfection. Perfection touts that it's a town that has a
14.
Population of 14. The numbers might be a little questionable, but maybe the board just hasn't been updated.
Yeah, I mean, it seems about right.
Yeah.
Except there's
just some accounting of, like, well, where's this kid's parents? But, you know.
Maybe they're one of the 14 we didn't see.
We do see, like, quite a few of them. But anyways, Atoka's got, like, 28. So they're about double the size. No, I need to look it up. Okay, when we come back to you, we will totally know approximately how many people live in Atoka. but this is the place where Reba McEntire has chosen as her restaurant, and you all, Reba's is the talk not just of Oklahoma. Reba's the talk of the nation.
She's a national treasure. And, you know, we're going to go eat her food. I hear the New York Times named her chicken fried steak one of the best meals in America.
One of the best meals. They weren't like one of the best chicken fried dishes on Route 66, anything like that. It was one of the best meals in America, Reba McEntire's chicken fried steak.
So we're going to go. Chicken fried steak is also like the state dish. Like one of the, we have a state meal. You know how people have state flowers, and I hear we're one of the only states with a state meal.
Yeah, states have state flowers, they have state birds, they have some states have state lizards. We have a state dish.
And we have all the other things, too, but, you know, that wasn't enough. People were like, they're hungry in Oklahoma. What's their favorite thing to eat?
Chicken fried steak. And it's kind of no lie, I will make it my personal job, my employment, all rides on a chicken fried steak. I'd eat it up.
I love chicken fried steak. Chicken fried steak and enchiladas. Not together, but well, those two things are like my favorite.
Catch me on the right evening and maybe together. Well, but there is no mention whatsoever of chicken fried steak in Tremors. But there is lots of mention of graboids. graboids and grabdoids. They're the sandworm.
Yes. Miyagi really wanted them to end with oids.
Oids, yeah. No, that was Mr. Chang.
Well, I know, but he's also Mr. Miyagi in the Karate Kid movies.
Oh, that is him?
Is that him?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's him at all. And I looked, because there are a lot of people in this movie that are from... Okay, well, we can look that up, but no, I don't think so.
Is he in Big Trouble, Little China?
That he might be in. We can look that up. That seems actually more like, yeah, ding, ding, ding.
He's definitely in something from the 80s. I picked the wrong movie.
This whole cast, it's littered with the people of the 80s. This movie's 1990, but it's the people of the 80s.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely, that's not Pat Moran. Pat Moran no. was Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't think of his name, but I was like, no, for sure, like, I know that that's not the same guy, but.
Oh, you know who he is? He was the grandpa, I think, also in the Three Ninjas movie.
We'll look it up. Yeah, we'll follow it up. Sorry. Like, guys, on the other half, we're going to tell you how many people live in Atoka and who exactly Mr. Chang is. But, so this movie's directed by Ron Underwood. We know he also did City Slickers and Mighty Joe. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
big
with Charlize Theron.
Yes.
Mighty Joe Young. But City Slickers is like a 90s classic, and yes. That's also like a western.
Like Billy Crystal. Uh-huh.
He likes making these funny, set in the west, bizarre comedies, I guess.
He likes to shoot a movie out in the heat, I guess.
Yeah, he likes being hot and sweaty.
Ooh. Well, under the correct circumstances, who doesn't want to be a little hot and sweaty? Right, guys? Right, gals?
No.
No? No? Okay, all right.
I don't
Kevin
sweat.
Bacon is... In this movie, all up in this movie, he plays Val Valentine, one of the handymen.
Fred Ward.
Earl Bassett. Reba McEntire.
The dad from Family Ties.
Yeah, Michael Gross is his name. And then we have Ariana Richards, who's also in a movie that we're going to cover later this year. She plays Lex in Jurassic Park. But she plays Mindy in Tremors.
Yeah, she loves the pogo stick in this movie.
She likes to cause vibrations, and then she also likes to notice them, because then she's holding her Jell-O.
She's always shaking.
She's shaking, one way or another. And I read on her IMDb, because I have not seen this personally, but she also reprises her role in Tremors 3.
Oh, we get Mindy again?
So we're going to get Mindy. I guess I basically just, like, just so you guys know, I totally ruined the end of the movie. Mindy survives.
Oh, shit.
Damn it! We should just stop this right now. We're recording again. I just ruined it. Spoiler alert.
Okay, take two.
Okay, we're going to edit that out. And no, we're not. You guys know we don't really edit anything out of these. Okay, should we just, like, get in? Get out.
Let's get in. Let's go to the desert. We're in the town of Perfection, population 14.
We're in Perfection, Nevada.
Is it supposed to be Nevada?
Yes, it is supposed to be Nevada, even though it's filmed in California.
Yeah.
So opening is Val and Earl. It's the morning time. They're just kind of doing their routine before they start their day.
The movie starts with, like, Kevin Bacon waking up and picking his ass, basically.
Yeah, picking his ass and taking a piss.
And then he tries to scare sexy Fred Ward into thinking there's a stampede.
And Fred, like, comes... Well, no, his name is Earl. Stop it. We need to call them their names. Val and Earl.
Yep.
We're already starting at the very beginning and going, Kevin Bacon! Like... We are so rude.
It helps our audience who might not have seen this movie visualize who we're talking about.
Who it is. But now we need to get into the character. Val is picking his ass and making a stampede all over the back truck to wake up Earl. And Earl is, like, telling him off, telling him how old he is, how young he is, how old he is. Paper, rock, scissors on who's going to do breakfast.
And they're fun little buddies. They really want to get out of town. They want to get out of Bixby. They want to stop taking all these menial jobs. You know, they're real handymen, but then they're, you know, having to do septic tanks and things they really don't want to be doing.
Yeah, they want to live the glamorous life in Bixby.
Not sucking out your shit out of your...
No, He just wants to pick his ass. He doesn't want to pick out other people's shits. So, yeah, they're hired hands, but they're itching to get out. And on their way back into, you know, quote, town, Perfection, it's just this little strip, this little street with, what, like...
four houses.
Four RV kind of set up, and then, like, a general store. So they're heading in, and then it, in the distance, they can see kind of out in the desert, there's somebody just finagling around in the dirt, and Earl is like, oh, yeah, the new college grad is here to do their semester.
And then Val gets super horny.
Oh, he gets hotter than a hot rod at this, like, idea. And he pulls off the beaten path and just starts going straight into the desert like he's going to run her over.
Like, let's go get her. And he's like, she better have blonde hair, amazing tits.
Legs for days. Yeah. Like, he just rolls off this list of his ideal woman.
And you find out he's crushing on some girl, and he has her pictures in his car.
Tammy Lynn Baxter.
Yeah, and Earl's always giving him shit for it.
You can tell that that must be some kind of, like, maybe country singer or movie star, you know, but it's who he has in mind. His picture of perfection is her.
Yeah, that's her.
They pull up, though, and he's like, okay, it's a girl, too. He knew it was a girl. Val had heard from other people that the new graduate student was going to be a girl. So here she is. She gets up from her little seismology machine.
Yep, she's dressed like, you know, you would think a paleontologist or something would dress.
Yes,
you
know, a little seismologist.
And she's got sunscreen, like, heavily all over her nose.
It is coated on there. And she is wearing, like, her glasses, her sun hat. She's, you know, her knee-high socks. She's looking like she's ready for summer camp.
And Val's unimpressed. He's a little disappointed, even though she's cute.
She is cute. And I think he kind of does dig her, but...
it's that sunscreen on his nose that really turns him off.
Yes. Well, I think he imagines that nose working in other areas around him and just seeing that little white, almost like a little fin coming up for breath.
Yes.
Around his wiener. Guys, I'm talking about fellatio. I'm talking about a little downtown.
Okay.
Downtown.
Anyways.
News. Okay, so they make introductions, but he's not really impressed, and so they leave and they go back to town, and then we get to meet all the other people in town at the general store.
Yeah, they're all there. They're all getting whatever meal they're making for the day.
We meet Mr. Chang, and we meet Reba's character, Heather, and her husband, Bert.
They're, like, survivalists, so everyone in town kind of makes fun of them for, like, stockpiling arms and, you know, always kind of talking about the end of time.
Living kind of in a bunker, so to speak, with their home being made out of big cinder blocks and having an armory.
They're kind of maybe the newest to town, because they even mentioned, like, we moved here to be isolated.
And yes.
Geographically.
And that does come into play later, because when the graboids are everywhere, they do feel very isolated in their abilities to reach out to anybody in the outside world. They will start to lack the ability to communicate aside from a CB radio.
Because remember, it's Perfection Valley, and apparently there's only one road in and out, and
then
mountains all around, and that road's going to get blocked up.
And the guys have a job to do after they go into town, and they're, like, kind of doing garbage work, getting rid of things that are in a junkyard, and having a couple of beers out of a toilet that they use as an ice chest.
I love
and
that
and that's where they really talk about, like, we got to get out of this town. Like, we've got to move on. I'm tired of taking jobs that are just getting me day to day. And then they go to this next job, and it's like the sewage tank that kind of bursts, and it sets them off. Like, you know what? This is it. We're grabbing our shit. We're loading up, and we're leaving town.
I don't want to be covered in I don't want to be covered in 14 people's shit.
I don't want to be covered in my own shit, much less 14 people's shit. So they're loading up. they've even got their hair slicked. They're like in their best getup too. Yeah. They're like, we're leaving town. We're going to put on our button ups, our pearl snap button ups, and our pressed jeans.
Our cowboy boots.
Got our little hat or our cowboy hats. We're leaving town. We're getting the hell out of here. They've even like washed their hair and slicked it back.
Yeah.
Like they're ready to go.
It's what you do when you leave town, yeah.
And right as they're leaving town...
Slick that hair back.
You slick your hair back when you're leaving
town? That's right. Gotta slick it back.
Slick it good. And as they're, like, leaving town, as they think, forever, there's a lady that runs out. She's like, no, don't leave yet. I really need this little job done, and I'll feed you. I'll give you free beer. And we see them looking at each other, like maybe they're weighing, oh, should they stick around for a little bit longer and get some free beer out of this? Nope. They hightail it down the road, out of view. There's like this little girl, Mindy, who's pogoing in the back, you know, in the rear view. She's
counting. She's up to like 600. So.
Yeah, she's trying maybe to be in the Guinness Book.
Or she just enjoys it. It's her thing. She's a pogoist.
She's a pogoist like the gummers are survivalists.
That's right.
And
both are equally important.
We need them both.
You need them both in every town.
And Val and Earl start heading on this one road out of town, and their eye is drawn upwards towards the sun. To a telephone electrical pole line thing in the distance. And they're like, who is that up there? They pull over. Val is convinced it is Edgar, who we might come to learn is like the town drunk. And they're like, well, we gotta get him down. Why in the hell is he all the way up there?
Yeah, because they're like, why is he climbing? You know, that's not his job in town.
No, there's 14 people in town, yeah. And he's not the climber. Everybody has a job, and his isn't that type of ability.
You know, Justine is our town's climber.
I am I'm pretty agile, so I have a few jobs. I am the town climber. I'm also the town parkour artist.
Parkour!
We do a reaction channel, and Josh finds it so annoying whenever there are characters that start fighting, and my go-to reaction is, parkour! Parkour! So catch that, guys. Get on our YouTube. Check out one of
parkour.
Our many episodes where I'm parkour! Okay, what's his name? Edgar. Yeah, so he's up on the electric pole. Val. Oh, there is that cute little moment. They always have a cute little moment, Earl and Val. They do their paper, rock, scissors of who's going to take on the new job responsibility they've landed themselves in. And so Val has to climb up to be like, Edgar, get down! What the hell are you doing up there? There's no response.
But then we get a close-up of his face, and it's like drying out and rotting.
Yeah, he dead.
He's long gone.
Dead. Like, he's been dried out like a little raisin.
And they get the town coroner.
Is the coroner around the coroner?
Yes, the coroner.
And is the corridor
around? There's a town coroner and a town... Now I don't even know the
corridor?
Word.
Corridor?
I'm saying. Corridor. Okay,
the town coroner who examines bodies.
Or like, he died of dehydration.
And everybody.
It's just like, oh, okay.
No, they're not. They're like, dehydration? Why is he up there for days dehydrating? It's immediately called into question what he's doing. Nobody accepts
it. And then they're wondering if they can, they're like, is he dehydrated like in an air fryer? And
was he roasted? how exactly did he dry out?
In a jerky machine.
And in a jerky machine. But he's apparently been up there brewing and stewing, roasting and ghosting for 3 to 4 days.
And they're like, this is so peculiar.
Okay, here's my question. So on this one town road, this how you get into town, how you get out of town? Nobody had left that town for 3 to 4 days? No one?
No. where there's nowhere to go. They say like the closest town is that Bixby. That's like 38 miles away. I guess you can drive 38 miles every day.
But if you're moving to a town and nobody leaves there for 3 to 4 days, red flag. Red flag.
I'm leaving every day.
I've got to get out. I got to stretch my legs. Here it is. It's a beautiful Sunday afternoon here in Oklahoma where we live. We have to get out. We got to go. We got to get out of town. We're usually leaving town every day to go to another town around here.
Yeah.
But no, in perfection, there's no need to leave. Yeah, you can
even
stay.
Though it looks like there's one, well, there's many jobs, as we said, but one that's maybe paying, and that's the general store.
And then the coroner.
And the coroner. That's all they have.
There's people dying. And then that also calls into question the number of population that should be on the board, because if Edgar's dead.
Yeah, it's like someone go change it to 13.
It's 13. It's unlucky number 13. Okay. Anyways, we're off topic. I do still find some heavy civil politics going on, you know, in this little town where there's just far too many jobs and not enough people to fill all of them.
Far too many jobs and not enough people.
Okay, so there's our next scene as it.
She's talking over me.
Okay, hold on, ma'am. We are aware that there is an interchange that is about to happen. Okay, back on track.
She won't let it go. Get on this 3 East.
This bitch. We are now in another scene. We have left the scene of the coroner, and the corridor. And we are on to this old man. And we come to find out his name's Fred, but we don't find that out until afterwards. But there's an old man, and he's kind of working in his yard. I guess he's an old man worker.
He's the town sheepist.
Oh, yes, he does have a whole bunch of sheep. They're just baying away.
He's got a little sheep farm.
And he has this little bitty hut for a house. It's like one little room.
He's a minimalist.
And I'm just saying, on the property, there's not much going on, and so it's just him and a whole bunch of sheep.
Let's say it's all he and the sheep need.
And he's tilling on his land, his little greenery he's got growing. I don't really know what he's got planted out there, but he is tending to it. And he has this cute little hat on, a little sun hat to keep the rays away from his face. He's not trying to catch any UVA or UVB rays.
A good sheep farmer should.
And we see kind of a sweeping camera view. It's a little copycatty of Evil Dead, how it's going through.
Showing like the point of view of the what we find out are monsters, but Evil Dead would be the Deadites' point of view.
And then we get the Fred guy being drugged down. He's gone. He's just got this quick little scream, and then no
more.
Sheep
are scared.
And we have Earl and Valentine. Earl and Val. That's a cute, like, little, just, like, duo name. Earl and Valentine.
Too bad they didn't make a whole buddy cop movie with the two of them or something.
They would have been really good, the two. I do think that as the two actors, they play well off each other. But Earl and Valentine now have left again. They're back on the road. Nothing is going to stop them from getting out of town, except coming across Fred's property and kind of seeing it all in disarray. And they, I guess, on top of being the handymen of perfection, they're also like the sheriffs, the town law enforcement, civil sheriffs, because they're the only ones that are really, like, looking into anything.
Yeah.
If it looks suspect,
like, I guess we gotta do it ourselves.
Earl and Val will look into it. So they walk up to where all of the sheep usually would be in their pen, and it's, like, nothing but remnants of sheep, viscera, just a little hint of what used to be full flocks.
What used to be a full flock.
Butter and
that could be a good song. Not the way I just sang it,
okay.
But someone could take those lyrics and make
and
a
do
song.
Something with it. And
maybe Shakira.
Wow. Oh. Sheep viscera. Okay. Earl and Val are like, where is Fred? So they're looking around this little hut house and they don't see him. They stumble upon his hat. They pick it up and there is Earl's face down in the ground.
And he looks dead too, so go change the sign to 12.
Now the population is dwindling literally by the minute. By the minute. So we've got no goodbye. We don't have goodbye Earl.
We got the Dixies. Or no, they're called the Chicks.
The
now.
Chicks, yeah.
They didn't write that song.
We now have said goodbye to Edgar and Fred. And now Earl and Val have to drive back into town to make everybody aware again that something's got to do with something.
Something's got to do.
And look, they...
dead people just popping up all around this town.
They pass by these, like, road workers. And so there's some other jobs that are in town. There are these workers that are creating the road that leads... or, you know, I guess maybe updating the road. I'm not sure. But they're working on the road. And it's two guys. And Val and Earl are driving into town. They're like, hey, there's a murderer out there. We just found our friend Fred. Found his face in the dirt.
And the worker's like, yeah, whatever. You're telling us tales. You're pranking us.
And they're using one of those, like, jackhammer things in the ground. And obviously that's, like, triggering.
Yeah, we'll find out later. That was, like, maybe one of the biggest no-nos in town is... don't be using a jackhammer right now.
Yeah, it's probably... I mean, I don't want to point fingers, but I'm going to point fingers and say that the road workers probably brought the tremors or the graboids into town by causing the tremors.
For sure. It's those poor workers' fault.
I'm sorry. They
unwilling or unknowingly did.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's their fault. By proxy, you know, like they just didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know the pot they were stirring. They didn't completely pick up what was being put down.
Yeah, they didn't know they were like using thumpers, as they call them, in Dune, to attract the sandworms.
And so the worms, the sand monsters are called essentially to them.
It's like a siren song.
Yeah, they're like little mermaids.
Vibration.
They are dirt mermaids. We're going to change the name.
Ariel's over there going through the desert.
And here are those little sand mermaids come just a barreling through. And one of the jackhammers actually pierces them. And there's like this bloody ooze that comes up from the concrete. And then the jackhammer gets grabbed, and then it's, like, dragged along the road. And then the guy is, like, sucked in. And then there's this boulder crashing thing that's happening. Because they're also, like, next to a mountain range.
Yeah, I don't know which one. Is it the Sierra Nevada?
Well, probably.
Appalachian, you're like, no.
No, it's not that. Yeah, no, I mean...
they're definitely something, you know, just desert, random desert mountains.
They're random desert mountains, and they're the little Perfection Valley, so the guys are dead, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, there's a cool effect where when he's jackhammering, he hits one of them, and you see blood bubble up, and then the jackhammer gets, like, taken away.
Well, yeah, I just said that.
I know. I'm just reiterating. In case they didn't understand.
And so anyways, the guys are dead. And the boulders have now started to block off the road. And whenever...
there's no way out.
There's literally no way out now. So Earl and Val, they stumble on the roadblock when they're coming back out. They went to go to alert the townspeople, hey, Fred's dead, now they're coming back, but no, they can't because it's all blocked. Oh my gosh. They, again, are the constant, like, finders of the scenes of the crime. And they see, as they're trying to leave, because now they have nowhere else to go but back to Perfection, they're making a U-turn, and their truck gets all hung up, or they think, on a boulder, But we find out it does not. It actually was going to get grabbed by the graboids.
The graboids. And they don't find this out until they get to the general store and someone sees it and screams. And then they're all like, what the fuck is this? An eel?
It looks kind of serpentine and it has a face, but it doesn't have eyes. But it definitely has a mouth and some teeth.
Seeing that there's no eyes, the seismologist PhD candidate is like, it must be completely subterranean.
She does say that. It's not quite yet, because that's when the big thing comes out of the wall.
But when she sees, there's no eyes.
Yes, yeah. When she sees, there's no eyes. But Ron does not at the general store
now.
That's right. So, she hasn't said any of
that. She hasn't really made friends with everyone yet.
No, she's still out there, and that causes them to worry. That is one of the reasons why they send out a couple of people to go look for her, but you are jumping ahead, sir. So we are now at the doctor's campsite at the general store. When they found the serpentine thing, they remarked that somebody needed to get out there eventually to alert the doctor, who is building his home, and they have kind of just like a little makeshift RV right now, but it's nighttime and the doctor is getting in his car with his lady and they're just looking up at the night sky, talking about how happy they are that they've moved here and they can't wait to get all settled down, but they do need to go back into town to Bixby tomorrow.
And they do such a good job just in these few minutes really establishing their like relationship, that even though we only get to know them for 5 minutes, like, you feel bad for them because they seem so happy and in love and ready for this next chapter in their life, and then these oids gotta come fuck shit up.
Yeah, the graboids make a tasty meal out of the both of them, and the pretty cool effect that happens here is that when the wife is being consumed, it's the whole vehicle.
Yeah, he pulls a station wagon down into the ground.
And kind of the station wagon gets pulled into the dirt upright, so the lights, the headlights, we see from a faraway view, and it's just the lights until they're kind of eventually dimmed out by being pulled into the earth, and the gravel kind of blocks the light view, but it's a really cool effect for the very early 90s.
Yeah, a lot of this has really great practical effects. The graboid always looks very organic, and it moves how you would think it would really move. You know, it's nowadays it would be like this great big CGI monster that springs out and, like, you know, could maybe even wreak more havoc, but the way they had to do things practically, they really, I felt, did a good job establishing that it can't really climb up too many things. It can't really, like, jump up on these rocks that they find out later is a way to protect themselves. They're just like, once they're out of the dirt, are kind of clumsy a little bit.
Yeah, the closer to the top of the earth that they are, the more vulnerable the graboids are themselves.
And that's kind of explained by like these hooks on their body that she talks about. These make them go through the soil really fast, but once they're above ground, there's not much for those spikes to like cling on to make them go faster.
But we also, like, at this point in the movie that we're describing, have no real idea what the graboids look like. We have only seen the tentacle parts come out and grab things and pull them in. So we still don't have an idea. We haven't seen the monster yet. We've only seen, well, we think we've seen the monster.
Yeah, we've seen part of it.
But
we
get
like
a bigger
reveal.
It's
like a tentacle with a mouth. And,
yeah.
You know, like, it's almost like a mini version of the big thing that shoots out of its mouth.
Yeah,
but there's a bunch of them. But
it does kind of remind me of like Alien, in how the big xenomorph has like a head, but then the mouth opens up, and then like a smaller mouth comes out. In respects,
100.
Not the same at all. Just saying that kind of similar makeup, and they're both creatures that are not created by CGI. They are mainly created by practical effects. And that's really neat, because like you said, nowadays it would have just been a completely generated computer effect that happened on the screen. So we have the campsite that, now there's no, the doctor and his wife have been eaten, And back at Mr. Chang's, they've devised a plan to use a couple of horses and take those on a ride into Big Speed to stop at the doctor's on the way there and see how they are and make sure they've survived. And then to make their way into Bixby, they thought probably using horses because they could kind of like more easily get away, more agile than trying to have a big car that might get like a tire caught in the earth, yeah, kind of thing. And they make their way to the doctor's campsite and quickly deduce like something, gotta do something. There's a sound of the Golden Oldies playing, but they can't find the car.
But they go to where the music is, and they start digging, and they find the headlights. And, you know, it's implied that they find the bodies, too, because they go running.
Yes, the earth kind of starts to tremble, and we see that the sandwormy thing has not left after making a meal out of those two people. And now Val and Earl get on their horses, and they're frolicking away, and the horses are like, nope, we don't like this. So they kind of start, the horses start to react to the how they are instinctually feeling about the animals that are below their hooves. Yeah. And
poor horse, he gets taken down.
Yeah, one of them gets the tentacles wrapped up, and the horse actually is saved, but yeah, it's a moment of like, oh my god, call the Humane Society.
Misery.
This poor horse. And they make a run for it. So the horses, they go running off one way, but then the graboid starts to go after the two guys. And so they make a run for this like dammed up wall. And they grab it, and then the sandworm doesn't understand because it's blind, we find out. So it's just going through the soil, but it doesn't realize that it's about to be blocked by a wall, like a dammed up wall. And so it makes an impact with it. And you could tell that it was moving very quickly because the impact does create a crack, a fracture in the cement wall, but it does enough to kill the creature itself.
And that's when she sees that it's subterranean.
Yes. So Rhonda shows up. She's like, whoa, what has just happened?
And that stunt where Kevin Bacon goes to jump and doesn't make it. It looks like it would have hurt.
I know. And he kind of like, slides down. And I imagine if that was,
I guess it was both of them.
Yeah. But I get what you mean. Cause his impact does look a little more like the bump than like, Earl's does. He kind of like grabs onto it and does a more, a fair dismount. Yeah. It's a cleaner dismount. But yes, so Rhonda gets down there in this ditch area that they now, that little creature, or not a little creature, but the creature's dead, so they can really get a good look at it. And she deduces that it is blind as a bat. And what, Josh?
It's subterranean. Fully subterranean.
Yes, it must be totally subterranean. And that line always reminds me of totally.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
PJ Souls, yes, from Halloween. So, must be totally subterranean. So, that kind of makes sense of its makeup. It's got a big mouth. Tentacles come out. It pushes its body through the soil by using these little fibrous sensors. And that's how it feels the vibrations of people, their voices, their footsteps.
They're like bats. It's echolocation, right?
It is kind of like echolocation. And she also offers up the knowledge that her seismic, like the reader that she has, was reading in different areas, but in that local area, in four different places. Big kind of vibrations. So she thinks that they've killed one and that there's three more that are out there.
Yeah, there were all those sensors were going off at the same time but different places. That means something.
Something got to do with something. But quickly another worm shows up and it has a missing like half tentacle, and Val remarks that it must have been the graboid that tried to get them when they were trying to leave town and found that the road was blocked.
Yep.
Because that tentacle is now at Mr. Chang's getting photos taken of it. But so they are being chased by a second worm at this point. And eventually they make it to this big boulder, but it's very isolated. And Rhonda's like, my truck, it's like way further out there. We can see the truck, but it is like not just a stone's throw away.
She's like, I have an idea.
Well, they have to stay the night there. And they have several attempts where they try to get off
the rock. And then she says, I have an idea. And first they ignore her because, you know, they're like, huh, what does a woman know? And then they're like, oh, yeah, you do have the best idea.
Yeah. We're going to pole vault
across
all of these boulders that are, like, spaced out by a couple miles to get to your truck.
And then they have, like, this fun, like, cheerful, like, adventurous music playing. I actually love this scene where they're all pole vaulting over all the rocks. It's so... It's inventive. It's fun. It's a fun visual to see, especially how they have it silhouetted. Like,
yeah.
And they're just...
I'm sorry, again, this, like, here, it's not the same, but it reminds me of Dune.
Yeah.
It's their way of, like, getting around the sandworms, where, like, in Dune, they do that weird dance...
Yes.
...to get across the sand. Here, they pole vault from boulder to boulder, because there's enough of them.
And I love how Earl, at first, like, doesn't make it across, just lands on his ass.
But by the time they... make it to the last boulder next to her truck. These are three pole vaulting Olympians.
They're good. They could go win us gold.
And
make our country proud.
They could win us gold, silver, and bronze.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
We would take a clean sweep of that event.
There's no trio pole vaulting event. So, yeah, they would all have to be first, second, third. We're going to get all the medals with them, guys.
So they make a very narrow escape once they get into Rhonda's truck and make their way all the way to Chang's. And Bert and Heather have gone off to get more weapons and look for help and get their larger truck. So they are at their little compound that they've created. And Earl and Val show up and they're filling everybody else in on what they've figured out. Like, it's not just this little tentacle thing. It is a much bigger beast. And there's three of them out there.
Like, literally a much bigger beast.
Like, I would say 100 times bigger than the little tentacle thing.
He's huge. He's pretty big.
And as they're, like, trying to fill them in on what's to come, it's the graboids make their... like selves known. They scare Melvin. He is like one of the little boy, like 12 years old or whatever. He totally pisses everybody off all the time.
Yeah, he might even be pushing like 14. He's a little on the older side, I feel like.
But he is always causing a ruckus around town. And
he's a show off.
He gets scared by one of them. And
we never see his parents, so he needs attention, okay?
Yeah. Somebody's not watching this child. The whole town is raising him.
Yeah. It takes a village.
So he's annoying, and everybody's always like, he cries wolf, but then a graboid tries to get him, and he ends up hanging from a light pole, and everybody comes out, and Mindy is pogoing away on her pogo stick, and so they gotta run, try to go get her, because she's just...
Kevin Bacon gets her just in time.
Just in time. Like, because the next scene is the pogo stick going out from under her, and then... it realizing it didn't get the little girl and spewing the pogo stick back out of its mouth.
He's like, I don't have arms and legs. I can't use this.
I would say I'm not really ever frightened in this movie. I'm not really that scared of the graboids themselves, but there are moments of suspense where, like, come on, come on, come on!
Yeah, definitely. It's more like a adventure western monster movie or something. Kind of, you know what I mean? It's almost like, you know, you had told me before that one of the alternate titles was Land Shark.
Yes.
So it's almost like Jaws in the Desert, but with the comedy kind of amped up. Like I said, it's more like akin with like a western comedy mixed with just a lot of adventure elements, and then a little bit of horror, like monster movie.
It's a creature feature for sure.
Yeah, a western creature feature.
Yeah, it does.
Comedy.
lend itself to, like, horrific. Yeah, it's probably going to be horrific in what it looks like. But, yeah, because of all of the comedy.
But this movie is legit good. It's really fun to watch. It's really funny.
It didn't get kind of, like, the love or the box office draw that it needed in the moment when it came out. And had mixed reviews. But once it got into VHS... Yeah.
This was, like, a staple on cable. I can remember, like, the USA Network or, like, what's another one that would have had it?
Like, definitely TNT. USA, yeah.
Always playing Tremors.
And that's where I think I first saw it. Tremors would have been.
Definitely didn't see it in the theater, but
no.
Watched it growing up all the time on cable. This and the sequels, but I'm not sure which sequels I've seen, but, you know, they would always be playing Tremors movies. Is USA Network still around?
I think it is, yeah, because at the gym, it's one of the, like, many TVs that's playing. It's one of the stations. So I don't know, like, if it's putting out any new work or if it's kind of one of those just, like, a syndication channel at this point.
They're like, we don't have Monk anymore. Wasn't that it's, like, big show.
What's his name? Tony?
Shalhoub,
yeah. Oh, my God, where are we going? We are doing a podcast right now. We are just chatting, like, we're in the middle of this movie, and we decided to, like, start talking about, is USA still a channel? Oh, God.
These are the important things.
Yeah, well, okay. So, we're back at town. Mindy's just been saved off her pogo. We've got two worms on the scene. They've separated and isolated everybody onto different parts of rooftops. There's been a moment where Rhonda's lost her pants. She's had to get new pants.
Yeah, she got caught up in the wiring of the fence, and then their solution to get her out real quick is kick off your shoes, take off your pants.
Yeah.
It was like the filmmaker's way of getting like a woman in their underwear, basically.
So
it's tastefully done.
It
doesn't like focus on her ass too much.
No, there's no, it's not rated R. We're not seeing titties. You know,
this is a solid PG-13. Nowadays might even be considered like PG if they didn't curse at all.
Yeah, but there's so many times where like Kevin Bacon is like, not just once, screaming, son of a bitch!
Yeah.
Then elevating it to son of a bitch!
And then you get Fred Ward or Earl, who's always like cursing or saying like bastard, and he's like, pardon my French. It's
like, pardon my French. They say pardon my French a lot.
Yeah, it's him that's like one of his funny little character traits is that he'll curse and say pardon my French, and then Rhonda, like at the end of the movie, kind of throws it back at him, like curses.
Pardon my French.
Like, pardon my French.
This movie is so good in this way. Like, it's very well-rounded in its characters. So many of them have little arcs. We really, like, know and love them and definitely don't want to see, as the cast gets dwindled down, we don't want to see them go. No. We want them to survive. But, okay, there are a couple scenes that I really want to make sure that we highlight before we get to the end. So, this one is one of my favorites, so we really need to make sure and highlight it. It is when everybody is isolated on different rooftops. We've had Nestor, who's one of the 14 townspeople. He's been sucked through a tire hole as he's trying to, like, get off the ground.
Yeah, Wang, is this when he gets eaten?
Mr. Chang, during the part where the tremors are kind of disrupting the foundation of all of the homes. Because it'll be a lot easier for them to get
burst through.
in if they can mess up all of the foundation. So that happens, and Mr. Chang is one of the first, like, we fully see how a person gets eaten.
Yeah, it's very Jaws-like at the end of Jaws.
Yes,
Robert
it's, I was just going to say, it's like a Quinn moment.
Yeah, it's like when Quinn gets eaten.
Jaws being our first one. Our first ever, and this being our last of, like, in the
hundreds.
Like, before we
hit
break into a new mold and we go into triple digits, we're land sharks.
Land sharks.
We're taking a full circle, guys. So I just had to have a little smiley moment to myself, and you all shared in it. Okay, so the buildings, they're simple, they're not reinforced, they're all kind of toppling. We've got Rhonda up on the little water tower, and Miguel, who has taken one of the little tractors, and turned it on so it can kind of draw out one of the graboids so Val can get to the big, what they want. Is like a cat, what is the cat thing called? I forget, but it is like a big, huge,
big, huge.
Oh, where is it in my notes? Because I swear that I actually wrote it down, and I even knew, like, I was going to have a hard time remembering what it was called, but it's more than just...
It's like a bulldozer?
Yeah, a bulldozer, but it has, like, tank things on it, and then it has a thing behind it.
It's like a grabber and a puller.
And they're, like, that's how they're picking everybody up.
Yeah, so they're driving around getting everybody. But we also had, have Heather and... What's his name? Bird had their big showdown yet?
No, we're getting there. Okay. So, like, that we have two scenes going on. It's them getting into the big bulldozer. And then at the compound, they've gotten on the CB radio and alerted that the graboids are headed to Bert and Heather. And so we get this whole, like, scene where they're, like, loading up the armory. They got their guns all ready. Yeah. They got backup guns. They got backup guns on backup guns.
Yeah. And they keep having to grab different guns once, like, the ammo's out. Then they go for the next gun. They're shooting. It's pretty funny because they have a massive wall of ammunition and weapons. And they're using all of it in this scene.
And they haven't seen the graboids at all. And their first... show is the graboid coming through their cinder block created compound and bursting through it and then using its tentacles to constantly try to like grab at it. It's also, it reminds me of like a frog tongue, how like a frog's tongue will like try to grab it and then lure it back in, like roll up. That's how I
He's
see
a
these,
big old frog.
How
frog
I see worm. These tentacle things.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You also, we lose another one of our graboids, right? Don't they kill it?
Yes, they shoot
them up. With the
elephant
gun? They get, like, their biggest gun possible. And
blow it, like, they basically just injure it enough, honestly. They've shot it up so much and penetrated it with bullets that it eventually bleeds out and dies. And so they're everybody's celebrating, like, yay, we've got... two down at this point, but another one's headed your way, so we're coming with our bulldozer dump thing, because they're all inside a dumpster like container thing, and it's being drugged by the bulldozer, and Bert and Heather have to climb up on top of their rooftop and basically take all their guns with them, and there's like a moment where everybody's like, come on, get in, because they're like loading all their guns up into,
and they're also making like these bombs. You saw her earlier, Heather, like grounding
they're
up
making,
a
like,
bunch
dynamite.
Of bullets and stuff,
yeah,
and gunpowder, and they're so they're making like their own makeshift dynamite. This is when the survivalists come in handy. I think everyone should maybe make one friend with a survivalist just in case. I don't want to be one. I don't necessarily believe in a lot of the conspiracy theory stuff, but it might do you some good to have a survivalist friend.
In my family, we have some survivalists, and I do always think, like, when the any, like, fill-in-the-blank apocalypse happens, I know where I'm going, I know I'll be safe there, if I can get there. It's just a matter of getting to the place where the survivalists are. And if they'll allow you onto their safe terrain, they might be like, nope, this is our space. Don't you come into it. But, so they eventually get their bulldozer over to the Gummers compound and pick them up, get all their guns, and they start dragging themselves across the desert to get to the mountains. The whole point of this is that if they can get to the mountains, they'll be safe because the graboids can't get through the dense rock of the mountains. So if they can get to those, then they can climb around those all the way to Bixby. That's their end game, is getting to Bixby.
They're really good at thinking on their feet, coming up with plans. I'll give them that. They're constantly getting themselves out of rough situations. So, you know, maybe their dreams of living in Bixby, they have good foresight. They know it's going to work out for them.
And maybe it's not just Bert and Heather that are survivalists. Maybe they're proving that they are all capable of surviving.
I'm a survivor!
As Reba McEntire would say. She works two kids loved her job. She's a survivor. Like, Reba literally has a song called that.
Yes, and she did write the end credit song.
Yes, it's called Why Not Tonight.
Why not?
Okay, let's get to the end. So, we have our last showdown as the bulldozer is going through the desert. The graboids, they finally trap the bulldozer from being able to lead. You know, they helter-skelter it, so to speak. It's on its rocker. It can't go forward anymore.
Can't go backwards. Can't go under it. Gotta go through it.
Gotta go through it. Can't go over it. Can't go under it. Gotta go through it. But they can't go through it either. So they see there's a boulder, and maybe that was the graboid's point from the very beginning, was like, we'll get you out there in the middle of nowhere and dehydrate you.
Yeah, we'll get you somehow. Or we're at least... they're like, part of the fun's just torturing you. We get off on that. So we don't care if we actually ever get to eat you or not. We just want to lure you to rocks and watch you suffer.
And they just start singing, one way or another, I'm going to get you one way, maybe next week. Because they really have all day. They can just, like, hang out there by those rocks. And but people don't. People only have, like, a few days before they're going to dehydrate. And that is something the gummers, like, bitch about, too. They're like, you came and picked us up when we... could have been on our compound with our 5 years of food and water and supplies. Could have been happy-go-lucky and know you had to pick us up. And now you can't even guarantee our safety. And we're on this boulder in the middle of nowhere just bitching and complaining.
Like, yeah, we found a good boulder holder. Not over the shoulder, just a legit boulder holder. It's holding us.
Are you wearing an over-the-shoulder boulder holder?
No, not today.
Okay.
Well, I'm letting those puppies free today.
You're letting your freak flag fly. Okay, so the last showdown is the dynamite. They start playing around with that dynamite, throwing it like it's a fishing line out there. One of the graboids gets it, and is eviscerated. And then the last graboid, it's a race to take it out off the cliff with the dynamite in hand. Val and Earl and Rhonda, they run for it. They leave the safety of the boulder, and they take that graboid all the way to the cliff, and then it comes out the top of that cliff and plummets to the bottom.
Yeah, he tricked them. He was like, those bombs came in handy. They only had one more left.
And yeah, yeah.
Lured it. They called it fishing, remember, at one point.
Yep.
Yep. They went fishing.
They went fishing. They caught a big old one.
The fishing and stampede.
Well, yeah, and that's how he ends it by saying, like, I had an idea, and it was like to take it on a stampede. So we get full circle moment again with the movie. Val starts a stampede at the beginning, and he ends it with a stampede.
Yeah. Both of them fake, but and people get tricked.
Yeah, there were no actual bulls.
They're both pranks.
That were harmed in the stampede.
No.
Great. So, the Earl and Val, they have saved the day, essentially, for the entire town. Now, mind you, the town has been dwindled down to half of that, but they have saved half of the town.
Yeah, they're
the remaining town.
Still at what, like population 10 or something?
Thereabouts.
Maybe 9.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's like about 9 people left.
Yeah.
Rhonda and Val have their little moment at the end.
He even takes the pictures of that celebrity he's in love with out. Tiffany or something.
Yeah, Tiffany Lynn Baker, I think is her name.
Out of the car and wads them up. And then he goes and kisses his girl.
He's like, you know what? I don't know what a smart girl like you would want with a dummy like me. He says something like that as he's like heading up, running up to her, you know. But he's got confidence. He's like, it doesn't matter. Maybe you love me. Here we go. Comes up to her and lays like just a wet one right on her face.
Yeah. I'd rather get that done to me by Fred Ward. Have him.
To each their own.
To each their own.
And that's why he didn't do that. Because he was going to save it for you.
Oh, he's so sweet.
But so credits start rolling. And we hear Mama Reba her siren song leading us into the night.
Saying, thanks for coming.
Why not tonight? Come out to Reba's. Have some chicken fried.
She's like, it's fancy was its name. So eat your chicken fried steak. Fancy. Okay.
Here's your chicken fried fancy. Don't let me down.
Here's a chicken fried steak. Don't let me down.
Butchering her. And I don't want to because Reba is a treasure of Oklahoma.
Yeah, of the nation.
Of the whole damn nation. She's from Oklahoma.
She's We're going to a restaurant.
Restaurant, Oklahoma.
And it is supposed to be legit good. It is kind of in a smaller town. And maybe even be her hometown. But it's...
We didn't bother to do any kind of research.
We're like, let's just go. But it's in like a really cool space that she had renovated a few years ago. And there was a funny story, Google it, where she got like stuck in there for a little bit.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and the fire department had to come save her.
Yeah, to come rescue her. Something about like they had... The ladder fell while they were up there.
It was like their makeshift stairwell to get from one floor to the next. But yeah,
she got stuck.
She got all stuck. But yes, we'll have tons to tell you about the restaurant and maybe a little bit to tell you about Reba, but definitely a lot to tell you about the food. And hopefully we are not attacked by any graboids while we're there, but we'll keep you posted. Stay tuned.
See ya in just a few seconds.
Content.
Yeah, we did. I will say there was one tinge of disappointment, and that was it was only a brunch menu today, y'all. So if you go on a Sunday, it's only brunch. But I still got my chicken fried steak. I just didn't get to have it with mashed potatoes and a roll like I was really wanting.
Instead, you got to have it as like crispy potatoes.
I had crispy potatoes and eggs. It was chicken fried steak and eggs. It was delicious. It was really lived up to the hype. Was one of the best chicken fried steaks I ever had, and that's one of my all-time favorite meals is chicken fried steak. So I'm still satisfied. I'm as full as a tick.
You're full as a tick.
He's
as stuffed as a goose.
So I'm still happy. I do want to go back someday and have like the real chicken fried steak meal, you know, with mashed taters and a roll and I love some green beans with my chicken
Just
fried steak.
Just a little
steak.
Bit of greens.
Yeah. So that said, it was still a wonderful brunch.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this cherry cola barbecue cheeseburger and Reba's tater tots that are like, just had a little seasoning
How
on
were
them.
Reba's tots, by the
Reba's
way?
Reba's tots were hot to trot.
Were they big handfuls?
They were substantial.
Big old tots?
I had two tots in my mouth, and it was sizable for sure. No, the whole meal was great. The atmosphere, the whole just kind of like, you know, vibe of the restaurant was very welcoming, and it's a nice day outside. It's very sunny outside. It's got really good lighting in there, so.
Yeah, it's, you know, what you expect from like small town Americana, you know, it has the cute little main street in Atoka. There is lots of little shops open, and I bet it's thriving because Reba's place did bring a lot of attention to this little town. You know, Reba McEntire is a national treasure, and she's bringing in the heat to Atoka.
Mm-hmm.
But so we wandered around the little main street a little bit before our reservation. But the building itself is really pretty. It's like an old corner building, like in brick building in this small town. It's two stories. It has, like, even, like, a little concert area for live music. It was packed. Good thing we had a reservation, or we would have been waiting over an hour to get in.
I think also due to tomorrow is the solar eclipse, and so Atoka is way more than halfway from kind of like what we usually travel to get to Beaver's Bend, and Beaver's Bend has been for like over a year now. Like, you can see the little billboard signs that are like, come to Beaver's Bend for the eclipse. So there's tons of people traveling today, making their way.
Yeah, Beaver's Bend is going to be in totality tomorrow, 100% in the path of the eclipse, whereas Oklahoma City, we're only getting 93%, which is still a lot. It's going to be still really cool up in Oklahoma City, but a lot of people are traveling down to that area because southeast corner of Oklahoma is going to be in complete darkness during the eclipse tomorrow.
That's so neat. And also given, like, you know, cloud coverage and stuff. So we'll see what the totality does end up getting to be, but that's really neat. Just kind of another draw to this region of Oklahoma.
So yeah, there are a lot of people in town on their way down to Beaver's Bend, stopping in Atoka to go to Reba's and, you know, what else there that town has to offer. But Reba's was really cute, lives up to the hype. If you're a Reba fan, you get what you're wanting. She has costumes on display from various concerts and kind of like some of her iconic show outfits.
You walk in and there's the big gigantic The Voice chair, you know how that show will have them face the opposite direction and the chair spins around and so that's the chair that we're talking about.
And they allow photo ops in the chair. We were going to, but it was actually like nonstop people getting in it. So we just didn't wait to get in the chair. But they also had like a little area with all her movie posters, including a Tremors poster. I mean, it's really cute. If you're a Reba fan and you're in the area, go. I wouldn't travel days to go to Reba's unless you're that committed of a Reba McEntire fan or you're just that committed to having a good piece of chicken fried steak. But it was fun for us. You know, it was just a 2-hour jaunt down. Now we're heading back. It's a beautiful day.
And, you know, Reba is the queen of country. She's originally from McAlester, Oklahoma, which is a couple of towns just further, I guess, like north-ish.
Yeah, I think it's like maybe the next town. Like, they're very close to each other, Atoka and McAlester. But she chose Atoka to open this restaurant. Did we already tell the story about how she got stuck in the building?
Maybe we've already mentioned that. But, yeah, she did get stuck, and the fire department had to come out there and save her. I argue that maybe the reason why she chose Atoka versus McAlester is McAlester happens to be the home of one of the state prisons in Oklahoma. You know, maybe the draw of tourism, they didn't want to highlight it with a background of the penitentiary.
You think she was afraid of, like, an escaped convict?
I think she is an escaped convict. I'm going to say that right now. That's also why she can't go back to McAlester, is because she would immediately be taken back into custody and, you know, put in ball and chain.
They're like, you might be fancy,
but that was your last chance.
Yeah. Here's your last chance, fancy.
Here's your one chance, fancy. Don't let me down. Finally, she got let down.
Yeah, Reba's place, delicious. Go if you like Reba and you like chicken fried steak or other things. Justine didn't have the chicken fried steak. I did allow her one bite.
Yes. I do enjoy chicken fried steak. It wasn't my go-to, but given that the menu was more limiting because it was brunch, I just didn't, burger was, like, cool with me. The options-wise, I thought, you know what? A cola? A cherry cola? Barbecue? Burger? Sign me up, Daddy!
She signed
up. Sign me up, Reba! If that's your real name.
She's got you.
Her real name. I did read up on, like, Wikipedia while we were, like, waiting for a resi, and she before she was even Reba McEntire, her family was like a little traveling family in Oklahoma that were called the Singing McEntires. Yeah. Oh, that's so cute.
Didn't they do like the rodeo circuit and stuff? Yeah, that's funny. The Singing McEntires.
Singing McEntires. And then, you know, for me, always and forever, she will be Trish the Water Spirit.
Oh my gosh. Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar. One of the funniest movies ever made.
And although we probably won't ever be able to cover it here on this podcast, because this is not a scary movie at all, I think it is my favorite Reba movie. But let's segue and get into the movie that we're currently talking about that Reba is in, and it is a horror movie.
Tremors.
And that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, Tremors is such a fun movie. I like that it's a movie that plays around with a lot of different genres. You know, you get action, you get western, you get horror.
Yeah, it's a creature feature.
You get comedy. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of everything. You know, they said it was Jaws on land is what they were kind of going for, and I think they succeeded. It's a fun little romp.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't, I would say, you're right, it doesn't garner that kind of like scary suspense that Jaws has. When we think of Jaws, we're thinking of Bruce the Shark, you know, just taking everybody down. But
and it's campier, you know, it doesn't hit that prestige level of like getting Oscar nominations mm-hmm. like Jaws did. But it's one of those movies that knows exactly what it's trying to do. It does it really well. If you're going wanting to have a good time, you're going to have a good time. If you go in, I don't know, being nitpicky or just wanting something else out of the movie, then maybe you're not going to have a good time. But I don't know many people that don't like this movie.
Yeah. And if you don't, I don't want to hear about it.
Keep it to yourself. Keep don't rain on my parade.
Exactly. Don't you yuck my yums.
Yeah.
I don't like it. Okay, but yeah, I do like this movie. And let's go ahead and just mention our fave scenes. Do you want to start or you want me to go?
I'll start. I think my favorite scene is the showdown with Reba and her husband in their like little artillery room where they're just grabbing weapon after weapon, having that huge shootout. It's just a really fun moment because, you know, you've been hearing that they are like these survivalists, but then you finally get to kind of see them in action and see what they're, you know, bringing.
Oh, they showed off their stock.
Yeah, what they're bringing to the table, what they're working with.
Absolutely.
They do. Like, they keep that beast at bay for a little bit, you know? Like,
yeah, they've got a total bunker situation. It's a fortress. They have an armory. The arsenal at their disposal probably is enviable for, like, military people.
And when the creature does break in, they are well-equipped to take care of him.
Yeah, like, I think that there could have been, like, another, you know, scenario in this movie where they all stayed there at the bunker and stuff and tried to, like, hold it out there. But they already had the idea of going to the mountains yes. and getting away. And but given that they'd figured out, like, how many graboids there were, mm-hmm. that dynamite, you know, like, they were grinding those bullets down and making the dynamite sticks, like, they could have. But it's okay, but I just think that would have also played out really well, too.
It's just an exciting scene. It's a really great action sequence. You get some good special effects. You know, you get the walls busting down. You get to see a lot of the puppet or whatever they use mm-hmm. as the graboid. You're getting, you know, the ammo being fired off. And it's just, it's a fun scene. It's exciting. It is kind of scary. Thrilling, I could say. That's my favorite scene.
My favorite scene, I do enjoy it when they are all on their separate rooftops. They've had to scatter around the little town. And Rhonda has to cause a diversion with that water tower so that Kevin Bacon's character can make it across. And then they do the diversion with the little lawnmower thing.
Yes.
And we get just this, I think it's a real tense moment of like, is he gonna make it? And then when he does kind of get caught and the little tentacles or whatever are trying to feel him out, how he's having to stay still. For me, that's like one of the most tense moments of the movie where it's got a lot of buildup and they're figuring things out too. Like, oh, they can't see. So if you stay still and you don't make any movements, then they could just be right by you and you mm-hmm. wouldn't be able to notice them. And I just think this movie's really decent and fun. And I love a good little creature feature.
Me too. There's not enough of them. I will say there is one scene that neither one of you mentioned. I was going to bring it up if you didn't bring it up. That is, I think, maybe the one scene that is pure horror. That's like the most horror movie part of the movie. And it's when the old man and woman are, like, yes. He gets pulled down to the ground. She runs to the car.
With the car,
is hiding
yeah.
out in the car. The creature is yeah. trying to get into the car and pulls the car down. That, to me, I think is, you know, because everything else kind of has, like, a bit of action or comedy
yeah.
or, you know, Western atmosphere to it. This was the scene. It's one of the only scenes, correct me if I'm wrong, that's set at night.
It is, yes.
And yeah. it's just, like, pure monster horror.
Yeah, and we don't really see the graboid like we do in so much of the other movie.
Mm-hmm.
And also the scene where Mr. Chang gets taken is very
yeah,
much like that
Jaws
moment where Bruce comes out of the water and, you know, everybody is like, oh my God, that's the fucking shark.
Yeah.
So we get, again, another like snatch and grab. And everybody there gets to see just exactly
so
what
it's grabbing
this
your
is.
Snatch, is that what you're saying?
How dare you?
Oh, snatch and grab, not
snatch
grab and snatch.
Snatch and grab. What is on your mind? Grab and snatches. yeah, so again, there it is. It's like the land shark moment where the graboid comes up and we get to see just
yeah.
how big it is.
Exactly. I agree. Fun movie.
He agreed.
What is your knife rating, Justine?
My knife rating, I'm going to give it a... I'm going to give it 3.5 knives. Because it does know exactly what it is, and it doesn't take itself seriously. I can return to it. It's something I enjoy to watch. And I do think it's made well, filmed well.
Mm-hmm.
Cinematography-wise, like, it's actually really pretty. You get to see the... The
yeah.
desert area.
Yeah, all
and
those, like, California desert landscapes are really pretty.
Especially when they do the pole vaulting.
Yeah, like, I love the pole vaulting scene.
I think it's a really well-shot movie. Like,
yeah.
cinematography-wise, like, it paints a pretty picture of the desert, of this, like, little bitty town in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you definitely feel the isolation of that
mm-hmm.
town. They sell that completely because you were supposed to believe that it's completely...
Yeah, perfect. It's perfection.
Yeah, well, and broken off from the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's one road in and out, and that road has been
blockaded, so...
So, they're stuck. You know, you see the mountains, you're like, oh, they got to get over those mountains to get out of this town. You know, just all that's really well done. I believe in their isolation. I mean, the town itself, yes, looks like a movie set. I've never seen a town that's only like 14 people and just like that concentrated. It's like usually places like that, it's very spread out. There's one house this way and then another house a mile
or two
away.
Yeah, it's almost like people live on their 14 acres and their
yeah.
neighbor is 25 minutes away.
But whatever. It's like,
yeah.
I still go with it. I'll give it 4 knives just to keep things interesting. I was going to go 3.52,
but you want to be a copycat? Like
I don't want to be a copycat. And I'll give it that extra half because Fred Ward is looking hot, hot, hot in this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, he is zaddy, zaddy. But you know, also, Michael Gross, who plays the Mr. Gummer, like the survivalist, like,
uh-huh.
I don't know, there's something about his look with the mustache. Like, there's a few zaddies on this screen. I think
Zaddies.
We would have fun in perfection. We would have fun.
We'd be
at
the
that
little town
armory.
Sluts.
Oh my God! Well,
not that slut. There'd just be two guys.
Town that you go to, you're the town slut. So that would just be par for your course. Okay. Well,
par for my intercourse.
Oh! He's on. He's on, guys. Well, tell them what's up next for our 100th episode.
Guys, we've almost made it to 100. We're, you know, doing our annual Frightmare trip next month, so... And that's kind of fitting. We love our Frightmare episodes. They're sometimes some of our most listened to episodes. So, I think it's fitting that that lands at 100.
Yeah.
They're also just really fun because there's not one central movie we're talking about. We could talk about a little bit of everything. We get to recap our whole experience with you guys.
Talk about our crazy moments and maybe the elevator or now that the convention is in a different area, check out our last year's podcast if you want to hear about that transition. But we are all game for the new place and
yeah.
everything it has to offer. So
I'm so excited. Neve Campbell's coming back. a lot of people are going to be there. Juliette Lewis. We'll talk more.
Yeah, I even wrote down, I was like, maybe I'm not going to share, like, who it all is, because we've got a whole other podcast next month to take up time and space on. Are you ready?
But yeah,
call this quits.
Yeah, in the meantime, go find us on social media. Please go rate and review us on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you listen. It really helps us out, especially if you jot down a few little things you like about the show. Mm-hmm. Hit that 5 stars. Helps us out. Helps us get seen more on platforms. If you haven't done that and you've been a listener for a while, please go do that. Mm-hmm. It's really helpful.
Just give us a little love. I want to love you. I want to feel loved.
I want to feel you on the inside part.
Oh, gosh. Speaking of beloved. Okay, we got to go. It's been a fun day. We need to get ourselves home.
Yeah, we need to digest all our food.
Until next time, take care. Bye.